Welcome to our Planning Commission meeting. Planning Commissioners in public. At the very beginning of our Planning Commission meetings, we have a liaison report where we discuss items that should be familiar in most cases to the Planning Commission, because in most cases, you've made a recommendation, but not every case, to the City Council. But these are items that are usually land use related that I think will be interesting for the Planning Commissioners to hear, but also to hear the final result when it went to the City Council for their final approval. So on the liaison report, there's just a couple of items. One is the South Hill Bistro. They've actually changed the name to Mont Blue, if I remember correctly. So I've got a slide that shows that. Alcohol dispensing establishment. This is in the South Hill development, so this is a conditional use permit. And so up on the screen is the location of South Hill. So this is the east entrance when you come in from the Heber side. This is the big spa building that's under construction. And this is where the conditional use permit was asked for Mont Blue is the new name. So you're used to that new name. And one interesting thing with this is a lot of times we get renderings and we get the actual product, and sometimes they don't look quite as good. In this case, the actual product looks very, very good. There are other good examples around town, like Springer Farms is one where I think it ended up looking a lot better than even what we looked at to begin with. So a lot of detail put into some of these projects, and you know, this is exactly what we'd like to see in our commercial zones. But the conditional use permit for the alcohol dispensing establishment was approved by the City Council with following the recommendation from the Planning Commission with the same conditions. So, any questions on that one? Next one, this is something that is related to what the Planning Commission has reviewed as we've looked at the master plans for the homestead. One of the requirements with the amended master plan from a few years ago was to record a conservation easement up Lime Canyon over the golf course area, so right around the Turnberry area. And that is still a requirement. They've asked for, this is the second extension of recording that conservation easement. That will happen. They've had some issues with selling units to show their financier that things are progressing the way they want. This is good. This is open space as required by the master plan agreement. That is not changing. But there is an extension that's been granted for them to record that conservation easement. So really the conservation easement is a belt and suspender type approach. We already have the belt, which is the master plan, but the suspender is the conservation easement. And so we're really tying it down tight to make sure that area is never developed. And it's really not even in the city's hands once that conservation easement is recorded. It ends up being a land trust that is really the holder of that conservation easement, which their sole reason for existence is to make sure that land remains open. And so we want the conservation easement recorded, but there is an extension that it will be recorded within the next year. And so we feel comfortable with that, and the City Council did approve that extension. Any questions on that one? Okay, so places of worship architectural standards. We looked at this last month. Again, this is a code text amendment, and we've had some churches that have been approved recently around town, and so we've had the discussion of what should those churches look like? Should they follow our theming? Because commercial buildings and resort buildings have all had that requirement. We can't put that requirement on single-family dwellings. Per state code, but we can on other structures, including religious buildings. So when we looked at it before the Planning Commission, there was a very good comment on using some languaging that includes places of worship. And so that's how this was adopted by the City Council. The one thing the City Council did add to it is that now civic buildings would also need to have that requirement. So if we had another fire station built, or the city wanted to put in a police station, those types of things, we would need to follow those same guidelines and go through the Visual and Architectural Committee or whatever process we have in the future. So that was adopted by the City Council with that modification.
And this cannot apply retroactively to the one is already going to comply. The Stake Center will not be held accountable to this standard, correct?
So it isn't retroactive, and I kind of hesitate to say right now, but I guess I will because I'll go on record. But I did have a representative from the church say that they are going to design it with some architectural standards for following some of our architectural standards for old European and Swiss. So we'll see exactly what that means. I don't have a drawing yet, and I've just been told verbally. So they don't have the requirement, but it looks like we're heading that direction.
Well done.
And there's been some very good work done by our mayor, Mayor Simons, on that subject. So we appreciate his work on that. Any questions on this item? Okay, those are the three items I had for the liaison report.
Michael, did you also have an announcement you wanted to do?
Yes, I do. So we're going to have a joint city council and planning commission meeting. And the idea with this meeting is really to get familiar with everybody on the planning commission, city council. There'll be some discussion, but a lot of it is having a dinner and really just get to know everybody. And that will be on May 26th at 6 o'clock. And I'm wondering, do we have a location for that?
Set here in this building.
Is it here in this building for that joint meeting?
Yeah, it'll be in here.
Okay. Yep, so here in this building, that's the fourth Tuesday of next month. So,
Try to make it. It's a concerted effort to get the planning commission and the city council to know each other, first of all, and understand the role of each. You know, I've been doing this for 5 years and never had the opportunity, so we're going to make a deliberate attempt to get together and have fun and get to know each other.
Yeah, it's definitely a great idea. I think it'll be good for everybody involved. And so, put it on your calendars, and we'll see you that night. We'll have our normal planning commission meeting next month, so it's not taking the place of that, but this will be a separate meeting. All right, any questions for staff on any items? Okay, perfect.
All right, we'd like to welcome the members of the public that are here with us in person, as well as those who are joining us electronically. To begin our meeting this evening, Kelly is going to give us an invocation, and then we'll all stand together to recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our Father in heaven, we come before thee in prayer at this time with gratitude that we have the opportunity to live in this beautiful community. We're grateful for those who serve, the work that's done behind the scenes. We're grateful for the members of the city that do serve in this community. We ask you to bless us this evening as we review the agenda items, that we might be mindful of the things that will help to improve the city, that we might be mindful of the needs of the members of our community. We're so grateful for the blessings that we receive from thee, and we say these things in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
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 I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'd also like to recognize that Mayor Simons and City Councilman Osborne are here with us this evening. Our first item of business is to review and to possibly approve the Planning Commission meeting minutes of our March 10th, 2026 meeting. Does anyone have any corrections or other comments about the minutes? They were all sent out to you electronically. If not, can we have a motion to approve them?
I'll make a motion to approve the Planning Commission meeting minutes of March 10th, 2026.
Thank you. You have a second?
I'll second it.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Wonderful. Thank you. Our second item of business, Paul Berg, agent for the Homestead Group, LLC, is applying for preliminary approval for a resort development to be known as the Homestead Golf Cottages and Homes, which is a Homestead Hotel Condominium Lot 2, second plat amendment of the Homestead Master Plan. The Homestead Golf Cottages are located at 700 North Homestead Drive and are in the R115 zone. Michael?
All right. Thank you, Planning Commissioners and members of the public. So this is the first step in a multi-step process. According to the master plan agreement, to go in and finalize a plat, it needs to go through preliminary and final approval. And so this is, you'll see this again for final approval. So this is kind of this is the first step in a four-meeting process. And so this will be a recommendation to the City Council for preliminary approval of this plat. And the plat is in, one thing the staff report says is just R115 zone. Part of this on the very north end is in the resort zone. So it's really both of those zones. So that's, there's a few updates from the staff report that I'm going to clarify tonight. So one is part of this is in the resort zone, part of it's in R115, but all of it is in the Homestead Master Plan that was approved back in 2008. This is part of Lot 2, so this is actually just a phase of one of the phases within the Homestead Resort. This is the very last plat that needs to be recorded. State code allows for a condominium conversion plat, and so this was really recorded as just kind of a blank slate. And the idea was that that can come back before the Planning Commission and City Council for final approval. It really gives the developer, when they're recording a plat, they can leave a piece out of it because they may not know exactly what they want in that spot. So it kind of holds the it's a placeholder, really. And so they've decided what they want, and it really follows the master plan that was approved. And so now they're going through that preliminary and final approval process. This is 2.69 acres, so the rest of the 78 acres or so of the master plan has all been recorded in a plat. This is the very last step. They do own other property that's not in a plat, and so we'll see what happens with that property in the future. There's a private road and storm drain system maintained by the owner and connecting to all the normal utilities that the city provides and the irrigation company provides. So here's an aerial photograph showing the core area of the golf course, or of the Homestead Resort. So this is about 35 acres, and we're looking at this peninsula. It's in the bottom southeast corner. Then a closer view of that. And this is the entire core area, and we're looking at this area down here. So here's a closer view. And there are a number of things to discuss with this. One is what we've got included here are five single family dwellings. And then we have what were cottages on the master plan. And so these are these upper buildings to the north. One of the agreements that's in place, it's a civil agreement really between the Links and the Homestead, is the access for five single-family dwellings comes through the Links private road. And so only these units are accessed from the south. These units up here, these are the condominium units, or their eightplexes. These have always been planned that they'll access from the Homestead core area. So I'm going to back up. So the parking for these units actually is up in this area, where when this was designed, the idea is most of the parking is here in the north or in the south. And so there's going to be walking to a lot of units. That's the idea. And a lot of resorts are set up this way. But also to get to these units, the parking is located up in this area. And so they do have the required parking stalls, and I'll go over a little chart that shows that. But there will not be any access for these condominium units from for any of the residents anyways that are going to be staying there. From this cul-de-sac to the south. That is limited to these five single-family dwellings. This is common area. This will look like a planned unit development plat. So there'll just be building pads, and all the green area will be owned by the Homeowners Association or the Resort Association. Again, single-family dwellings. There are some changes that's been made recently to code. So there is, instead of a 30-foot setback, there's a 10-foot setback for these units. You can see they staggered those as they described when we were looking at this before the Planning Commission and City Council. This unit here has a 30-foot setback both on the rear and the south. Now, one thing that's not reflected in this drawing that does need to be reflected is there was a plat amendment to Swiss Creek where this property line jogs. And so the driveway for this unit that was located on the Homestead property, that would actually changed hands to where this property owner now owns a bit of this. And so this will need to be adjusted, and we'll need to meet the 30-foot setback from the property line as per the master plan agreement. So that's one adjustment to this plan that needs to take place. And I did add a condition reminding of that change that needs to happen. So probably on the next round we'll see a change in the plans when you see it for final. One other thing to take note of, and I was reminded of this from one of the neighbors when we went through and did the master plan amendment that allowed access from Pine Canyon Road to the spa. There was a requirement to put in a landscaping area north of this cul-de-sac to really show that there's not access from this cul-de-sac to these cottage units. I don't know if the planning commissioners remember that discussion. I think it happened before planning commission from the neighbors. Actually, Gary Gorga is here. He just stepped out. He was the one who brought that issue up. And that did make it as a requirement of the master plan to have a really separate the north end of this cul-de-sac so it doesn't appear to be access for these units, because the units really do access from the resort core. And so that's something that needs to be added to the plans also.
So that would prevent people from those cottages to use those parking stalls, right? Are those three
parking stalls
right there?
Yeah, these parking stalls are not for these units.
Technically, but the landscaping will keep them from becoming. So.
Yeah, there'll be a bit of a barrier. It's not necessarily a fence or anything along those lines, but some type of physical barrier that really kind of separates these units from this cul-de-sac. So a couple things to talk about with this, and I'll be brief. I included quite a bit in the staff report, so I hope everybody had a chance to read that. But just kind of the big picture for the master plan is there's 453 keys, which are separate rentable areas allowed in the master plan. With this proposal, they're up to 285. They can come back and increase density in the future because the master plan does contemplate that and does allow them a mechanism to do it. It does require going through preliminary and final approval again and amending existing plats to do that. But they have a right to come in and ask for more density of rentable spaces at the within the core area of the homestead. Likewise, with building area, the maximum they can have, and this is just the footprint, is 367,750 square feet. With this, they're up to 268,432. So in other words, there are things that can be proposed in the future and really will need to be approved per the master plan until they get up to those limits. So in other words, we'll probably see more proposals from the homestead as we move forward. And really the expansion in this phase of creating, of really dictating how many units can be in those two cottages is allowed by the master plan. So a couple of things I've had questions from neighbors. One of them is height. The single family homes are limited to 35 feet from natural grade, just as we see throughout most of town. Really the cottage condominium, since they're really a hotel, they're not limited to that 35 feet, but I'll show you a drawing that has been submitted to us that shows they're going to be at that 35-foot level. But technically, they can be taller in this area than 35 feet per the master plan agreement. Water rights will be dedicated before the reporting of the plat. So parking stalls, this is a lot to take in, but this shows all of their parking, including the condominiums and the 16 units included in those. So they need 491 stalls. They have 563 in the master plan. So those numbers have been updated from what was written in your staff report. This is a rendering that was given to us showing the really those condominium cottages. And it's really hard to see this number, but it's under 35 feet. So even though they could go taller, they're showing us that they're going to be 35 feet. And these drawings have also been reviewed by the Visual and Architectural Committee. And so they do. They have been recommended for approval. Now, the single-family homes, those ones have not gone before the Visual and Architectural Committee. We have set up a meeting that is going to be at the very end of this month. And so they'll go through and make their recommendation at that meeting, most likely. So before you see it for final, we'll have a recommendation of what those homes will look like also. So some possible findings for you to consider in your motion. Proposal will benefit the city financially by creating a greater tax base, and that's one reason why we have the resort zone in town. It helps keep property taxes low for all the residents of Midway, because the resorts bring in so many different types of taxes, property tax, transient rental tax. It helps us comply with resort tax requirements. So there's a lot of benefits for having the resorts in town. Proposal will help the city better comply with state requirements regarding the ability to collect the resort tax. Buzzell does comply with the requirements as described in the master plan. With the caveat, we've got to have that landscaping put in on the north end of the cul-de-sac. The proposal does comply with the newly adopted setback requirements for structures bordering dedicated golf course open space. Some proposed conditions: all lighting in the proposal will comply with current midway requirements, so that's dark sky compliance and making sure that we don't have light trespassing onto the neighbor's property. And then all required parking for each building and use shall be completed before a certificate of occupancy is issued for each building. So the parking is located on the other side of the resort. We need to make sure that's in before we issue the CFO. And then adjust the southern boundary line to reflect the correct boundary. And the landscaping is really already required by the master plan, and so it doesn't need to be a condition. There's not a way to change that through this process. It's just a requirement. One thing I do want to mention regarding transient rental units. So in the master plan, really the master plan allows the whole resort to be transient rental. There was a master plan amendment that went before the city council back in 2008. It was also final approval for this phase. And what the city council approved was prohibiting four of these units from being nightly rentals. But that plat was never recorded, and the master plan agreement was never signed by the owner of the homestead at that point in time, and was never recorded. So really what governs this is the original master plan. So that was new information that I gathered last week as I went through and read the minutes from what had happened back at that point in time. So these units were part of the original master plan, and there's not a limit for them to not be transient rentals, so they can all be transient rentals because that agreement was never recorded and never signed by the developer.
What was the purpose or motivation behind trying to get them excluded from the TROT?
Yeah, that is a good question, and I don't think I've got a good answer because the minutes didn't go into that detail on the reasoning for it, but in my experience with master plans, the developers come in and propose a master plan amendment, and then there's negotiations that happen between the city and the developer. So it must have been part of the discussion, but again, it was, even though it was approved, it was never signed and recorded, so it's not part of the master plan right now. Any other questions for staff on this item?
Spots, any questions? We also have the applicant here if you have any questions. Paul?
Just curious, are the condo aplexes, are they basically the same look and style as what we've got on Homestead Road? I'm just trying to figure out size, and are they about that size? Is that what those are?
So like these ones that are over here, there's a 6-plex building and then 10-plex building, so these will be 8.
Okay.
But, so have, pretty similar though.
Do you have the rendering?
Yeah, there's a rendering.
Yeah, I've got this one here. Yeah.
And the styling, like, it looks like the materials, it's all going to be the same, similar.
They're identical, so Ben Shakespeare, can you hear me? Mm-hmm. Okay. 3138 Benelli Trail. So I just wanted to speak on some of the...
I'm not sure that's on.
Keep talking.
I'll keep talking. You can hear me, okay? I'll speak less loud. So just, I'll speak more on just some of the details. Some of those things that Michael covered very well. We did, myself and Cam Porter, one of our superintendents, met with the Leagues today. Marty called me yesterday, just some concerns with some of the residents, or at least one of the residents had brought up. And some of that I just wanted to cover in this. So there is, going back to what Michael's covering on the, we've always operated under the understanding that these would be transient rooms. These would be in the Marriott Autograph rental and all of that. The 08 agreement, there was document, you know, something there that had this a little different. So, and I think the Links, you know, obviously saw that as well. So we, you know, the last thing we want is arguments with our neighbors. I think we've worked really well with most of the HOAs around the resort, and the Links especially, because we're right adjacent with them. They've been fantastic. But in speaking with some of the things that came up today, just as we talked through it, there is, as you can see, there is connection that comes to the top of that cul-de-sac with whether it's walkability or walking in there. The concern was, well, does that encourage people parking there and then going to the units? The plan for the resort is to have bellmen. The plan is to check in at the hotel from there, park your car, and be shuttled around the resort all over. The walking, people are going to be walking or being shuttled. This would be no different. These do not have kitchens like the other ones. So these are similar to hotel rooms where there's single units with kitchenettes. And so they will not have full kitchens. But because these are, all of those homes from the cul-de-sac will be part of the Marriott rental pool. These will have housekeeping. These will have all of those amenities that come with it. So as we talk through it, if we shut the access off, we feel like we need to keep that access, because if we do shut that off, as far as at least for cards, it will encourage all that traffic now to go around through the links and all of that. As far as the landscaping and the buffer, creating all that, we have no problem with that. This needs to be landscaped. It needs to be landscaped well. The guest parking was something that got added late. In fact, if you are over there now, this is all curb and gutter. It's ready for asphalt, this road. It came up just as a discussion of whether, if we didn't have the guest parking, would they park in the Lynx guest parking? Would they utilize some of that? I think we're impartial on that. I think if in the meeting today with the HOA, we went back and forth on this. We can screen it. We're not worried about that. As I left, I think it would be good to have the guest parking, but we don't have any really dog in that. They'll park at the resort regardless, and then the other homes have garages. So I think as far as everything else was discussed earlier this year, this road was approved with a narrower roadway, so we won't see parking along that roadway. It was done to preserve trees and that. I think you were part of that. We have driveways that could, stack a car on there, so we'll keep parking off that. And then again, I think the real key comes down to just the way the resort's designed. We're encouraging walking, biking around the resort. Our hotels, 1886, the Milk House, will all be accessible by walking, biking. And then the main concept will be there will be multiple bellmen traveling this, to where you can call, you can have someone come to your unit, pick you up and take you to the pools, take you to the restaurant, take you wherever you need. So I think as far as some of the plat details and that, I'll leave it to Paul Berg, but I don't know if there's any specific questions to the design or the intent.
One question as a clarification. When you say to maintain access to the cul-de-sac, you mean just for golf carts, not for a regular vehicle?
That's correct. Yeah, this would be solely golf carts. This would be the housekeeping carts. And if you see even the stalls in front of these aplexes, those are golf cart only.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Anyone else?
Just a question to clarify. So roughly you can create 150-ish more keys, right, in density. Do you have an idea of where you contemplate adding those?
Yeah, there are two more places on property, on the resort, in the resort core, that we have kind of deemed out for that. So north of, I can't see what number that are. Thank you, Michael. Right there, that's right off the number one tee box, just north of our current clubhouse. Some of that, we have Adventurage, we have Ski and Bike, some of those things that still need to come into the property. So that's one, and then just west of that, correct, right there. Those are the last two areas on the resort that are really undetermined. Originally we had talked about off holes 1 and 8 up there off Homestead Drive. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but our green, Mike, will be very happy. We've moved the number one green right up to the back there. So we don't plan on doing anything up there. We put a lot of money into that golf course and moved that green to cover those lots. So those two areas that I just showed are really the last two planned out developments, and we're just in concept. So that we will be coming back for discussion on that probably sometime either later this year, at least on the one close to the golf course, or early next year.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else?
Thank you.
Okay. Michael would you put your conditions back out? I'll just briefly talk about some of those. So number three is new to me. That property doesn't show up on the ALTA survey, and this is the first time I've seen this condition, but I'll explore.
We can,
if you can send me whatever documents the neighbors. Okay. Also understand that we're still well over the required parking, so that should help. We still have 60 extra spaces. Travis, since you asked, I'm going to give you a really boring history. So back in 08, the homestead came in with their first phase of for final approval of the 08 master plan that we're working on. When they got approval for that, it wasn't to build units like you're seeing here. They were just going to have lots for sale to help the homestead raise some cash. So some of the neighbors, I think, expressed their worry. The homestead was just selling lots anyway, and so it was fine to put that restriction on it. But after 08, they didn't record the plat. They didn't record the development agreement. And when they came back in 2010, started more to propose units, that condition was not put back on them. The homestead also let that approval lapse. And I think we even came back in 2013. I want to say 2018, but I can't remember if that's right. So there were three more cracks at it after that, and that condition never got it added back in. So everything's just back to the original 08 plan. Yeah. Hopefully, this will be the last time we ever come back with this space. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the road's mostly built. Do you have any other technical questions for me? Okay, thanks.
We are not technically scheduled for a public hearing, but I see that we have some interested parties. If someone had a question or a very brief comment, we would be open to letting you come to the podium and state your name. Just take 1 or 2 minutes to do that.
Hi, Lori Aron, the president of the Lakes Homestead Association. The Lakes.
Can you also give your address, please, ma'am?
Oh, 414 Fairway Drive, Midway. President of the Homestead for the Lakes, and reiterating that we did have a chance to meet with Ben this afternoon to talk through some of the issues. Just want to go on record real quick that we were under the assumption that the first four homes were single family homes, not in the transient. So we are in discussions. We have some open items with the Homestead to resolve over the next little bit. Ben's been a great partner through this whole process. We anticipate that we will get to resolution, but we haven't quite gotten there yet, just given the fact that we just learned about this change actually within the last 36 hours or so. So just wanted to put that out there.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right, thank you. With that, if there are no further questions or discussion items, would someone like to make a proposal? And Michael, do you need us to add in, as far as the zone, that this also hits the resort zone as part of the proposal here?
I don't think it's necessary to include that in your motion. I will definitely update that as it goes to City Council. And so I've actually already done that on the next staff report, so okay. We're in good shape.
Thank you.
I do just have a question. So if there's concern about this late, finding about nightly rentals and so forth, is that if we approve something tonight, does that eliminate their chance to continue to negotiate that, or how does that
happen? And so really, it doesn't change our code. I mean, our master plan that's already been approved, it doesn't change that language. They may have some negotiations that's kind of give and take between those two private entities that maybe the homestead agrees to that limitation, but it wouldn't be because of the language in the master plan. The master plan does not prohibit these as nightly rentals. And so they can continue to work with them directly, but we wouldn't be able to enforce that in any way.
I propose that we recommend approval for the preliminary approval for the resort development to be known as the Homestead Golf Cottages and Homes, which is in the Homestead Hotel Condominium Lot 2. Second plat amendment of the Homestead Master Plan. The Homestead Golf Cottages are located at 700 North Homestead Drive, and are in the R, 1, 15, and resort zone, along with all of the possible findings, but excuse me, all of the conditions that were recommended tonight.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you. Any further questions or discussion before I call for a vote? All right, can we start down here, please, Kim?
Yes.
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 All right, thank you. Item number two, item number three.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item number three, Thomas Thibodeau is applying to amend the current conditional use permit for Hidden Peak Provisions that will expand its approved sale of beer to also include wine and hard cider. The restaurant is located at 93 West Main Street and is in the C2 zone.
All right, thank you. Yes, this is really a modification of the current conditional use permit that was approved by the City Council back on December 6th of 2022. So that allowed Hidden Peak Provisions to sell alcohol on site. And after they did receive approval from the city, they went to the state and received approval from the state. And the approval was for a limited restaurant alcohol license. But to come back and modify what they're serving, they need to come back before the Planning Commission and City Council, since it's not exactly what was proposed at that point in time to what they want to do now. And so they are proposing to expand that conditional use permit to include wine and hard cider. Really not changing their approval that they've got with the state, though they will need to go back to the state, is my understanding, and present this change. But as part of the approval from the state, there are different categories of alcohol establishments, and one of them is that 30% of the restaurant sales can't be any more than 30% for alcohol, is what it comes down to. 70% has to be other items, including food. So any customer wishing to purchase alcohol, they actually have to purchase food. They can't just go in and treat it as a bar, for instance, and just purchase alcohol. So that's one of the requirements for a restaurant permit from the state. So the Department of Alcohol Beverage Services is the one that really regulates those specifics. It's not the city that regulates that. We just allow alcohol with whatever criteria we like to. But these items are regulated by the state. The one thing we do regulate is signage, and we've had the same condition, and the original conditional use permit has this condition that no alcohol-related signage can be visible from the exterior of the building or on the inside visible from the outside from 100 West. So really don't want to have any advertising seen from the road for alcohol, and that's been a very consistent condition that we've imposed on all conditional use permits in probably the last 10 years here in the city for alcohol dispensing establishments. The applicant does not have the ability to receive approval for an on-site beer garden, so that's a separate type of permit that they'd have to apply for to be able to have a beer garden. So this does not include that. It's possible findings. Both CUP and local consent allows the applicant to apply for state and licensure to sell wine, hard cider, in addition to beer. And you know what? There are a lot of these conditions. They're in your staff report. I think there's 16 of them. So I'm not going to go through and read all of those. Hopefully, I had a chance to look at them. And so I'm going to kind of jump to the chase on this one and go down to proposed conditions. Really, nothing is changing except for adding the hard beer and cider, or I'm sorry, the wine and the hard cider to the menu. And so we would continue with the same condition from the original conditional use permit. No alcohol-related signage would be visible on the exterior of the building or on the inside, visible from the outside from Main Street or 100 West. And it's really not visible from Main Street except on a very slight angle. And then all non-compliant signs, including but not limited to the existing neon window sign and parking lot A-frame sign, should be removed and remediated as a condition of any approval. So really making sure it meets our current sign code over at the establishment. So those would be our two proposed conditions for you to consider. I'm happy to take any questions that you've got. We also have the applicant here, and so I'm sure that she can respond to any questions that you've got. This is not a public hearing. We will send out letters for the next round before the City Council and have a public hearing at that level.
Any questions? I have a question for you. I always think of wine as just in a big bottle, whereas the cider and beer seem to be more like, you know, an individual container. How will the wine be served to your customers?
I'm going to do lots of research on that because I don't want to serve large. I'm going to serve it by the glass.
By the glass?
Yes. Bottle sealers will be available for groups of what, three or more. But my vision is just by the glass. So a 6 ounce pour.
Okay.
And they also have, wine has come a long way. So they have wine in cans now, similar to beer. So an individual portion that you can, that we can serve to guests.
Okay.
Tableside.
And that would be if someone was doing a takeout order, not?
No takeout at all.
Oh, so you cannot?
Everything that has to be consumed.
Has to be consumed all out, even if it fits an unopened container.
I can't sell unopened.
I'm ignorant. I didn't know
that. I can't sell those. I have to open everything before I deliver to guests.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? All right. You know what to do.
I'll make a motion that we amend the current conditional use permit for Hidden Peak Provisions that will expand its approved sale of beer to also include wine and hard cider. The restaurant is located at 93 West Main Street and is in the C2 zone, and we accept the conditions and findings that were presented.
I'll second that.
Thank you. All right, can we start with a vote with Janine?
Aye.
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 All right. Thank you.
I hope everyone goes there a lot because it's really good.
The sandwiches are delicious.
Thank
Absolutely
you.
Delicious. Thank you for being here. All right. Item number four. Jonathan Burton, agent for Innovative Harbor, is applying for a conditional use permit for a daycare. The property is located at 15th South and 700 East and is in the C2 zone.
All right, thank you. So we have received an application for a conditional use permit for a daycare. I think a lot of times we think of a daycare as being for kids. This is actually for adults with disabilities. And it's kind of the idea with this is there is a home on the property. And actually, I'll go through the land use summary first, and then I'll start explaining it. So as a land use summary, this is in the C2 zone, and it's 0.32 acres, so just about a third of an acre. There is one single family dwelling on site. There's a detached accessory structure that actually was approved as a commercial structure because there was an approved conditional use permit for mixed use back in 2020 on site. This was the site of Proven Moto. There's a family that lived in the home and had this a motorcycle repair shop. It didn't look like a motorcycle repair place because they did a very good job of just keeping everything inside and did a really nice job with it. They sold the property. Current owner is applying for this use. And on site with a single family home, actually we'll go over the pictures here. So you can see our main street here in the center. Here's Center Street. And this is located on really the east side of Main Street, just south of South Hill Development. You can see the construction of South Hill on the north side. So there's a single family home with a detached garage right here. And they have also already been approved for really, it's a residential home for not really a boarding house, but sometimes we call it that, where there can be up to 8 individuals living in the house full time. And that's allowed by federal law. It's Federal Fair Housing Act that this type of facility can exist in any residential zone. So that's been approved by the city already, at least through the planning department. It hasn't gone through the building department quite yet. So there are going to be residents living in the home full time. But this detached structure here is where they'll run the daycare. And the idea is that those who are living in the home and then also other individuals around, probably within the Valley area, will be picked up 5 days a week, basically, and they'll be brought to this site, and they'll do activities, they'll learn life skills, those types of things, and they'll go out to other places and come back. But none of those residents drive to this site, so the employees will come, park on site, get, you know, one or two vans, and go and pick up these adults, that will participate in this program. So it's really something that is a needed thing for the community to for these individuals to learn different skills and to have activities to do. And so that's the idea with this. Again, the boarding house is an approved use. It's allowed by our code. It's allowed by federal law. This is kind of looked at as a commercial use in our code. That's why it's an adult daycare. The state does regulate both the boarding house and also this adult daycare, and there's a definition in state code that really matches this very perfectly, and that's in the state. That's in your staff report. It is again regulated by the state. They'll dictate the number of individuals based off of the occupancy of the detached garage. We put in there just kind of as a placeholder up to 20 participants, including the ones living on site. But it's possible the state could come back and limit it to a number less than 20. So we will end up going by their number, unless their number is 22 and ours is 20, and then it will be the lowest number of the two between the state and the approval from the city. Now, parking-wise for a daycare in the code does require more stalls than what they've got on site. But they do have the ability to ask the city council for really accommodation, because this is not a traditional type daycare situation where you've got pick up and drop off of maybe kids, for instance. And so, and especially where the participants of the program are not going to be driving vehicles on site, they're going to be picked up. They've got three bays in the garage right now, where the idea is the employees will actually park within the garage, and then the two vans will use this area out on the driveway with this little turnaround to be able to come in and park and come back out. So the idea is to try to make it really not stand out from the residential street that it's on, to make it look more like a residence, especially with the nature of this business, to where they're going to be picking up individuals in the van or two vans that they've got. So there really should be a minimal impact from that aspect regarding this proposed use. So a couple of things to go over on discussion items. Adult daycare is for local impaired adults that would participate in activities at the site. The facility would provide the day program services for residents of the group home and up to 12 other participants, so 20 in total, including the residents. State will inspect the facility and determine the maximum number of participants. And then the participants of the daycare that do not live on the property will be brought to the property by employees for the activities. And no participants will drive their own vehicles. And then the applicant has the option to present a parking plan to the city council that allows for accommodation based on specifics of the proposal and location. That's what they plan on doing when they go to the city council. The city council has the ability to look at that issue and approve something differently. So I think I did cover all those issues. So some possible findings. Proposal is a conditional use in this zone, so it's really a conditional use as a permitted use. You have to look at it as something we have to approve, but we can impose reasonable conditions on the use. And so that's really the, a lot of times we look at a conditional use and we think, oh, we have the ability to really deny them, and it's a very rare circumstance where we can deny a conditional use. It has to be looked at as a permitted use with reasonable conditions. And then the property was approved as mixed use in 2020. So there's already been a conditional use approved on site. This is just a different type of conditional use. And then the adult daycare could host up to 20 participants, which includes the residents of the on-site home. And the state will inspect the facility and determine the maximum number of participants based on state code. And we have not proposed any conditions. But again, the Planning Commission could make a recommendation to the City Council of any conditions that you would like to include. And the possible findings are just ideas for you to consider in your motion. When we go on to the next stage of this, after a recommendation is given from the Planning Commission, we will hold a public hearing before the City Council. There will be letters sent out to all the neighboring property owners within 600 feet. And so the neighbors will have a chance to come and hear about the proposal and make any comments at that point in time. So I'm happy to take any questions that you've got. I did talk to the applicant, Jonathan Burton. He's not able to be here tonight. I tried to make sure I had all the information that I could get to hopefully relay that to the Planning Commission. He does plan on being at the City Council at the public hearing to be able to answer questions there. I don't think we have any representatives of the applicant here, but I could be wrong. So, nope, I don't think so. Nope, Brenda's not the representative of the applicant, so. Any questions for me regarding this item?
I have a couple questions. What will the hours of the daycare portion, like will they have 8 to 5 hours or, you know, what, will it extend into the evening or?
Yeah, from what I recall from talking to the applicant, and I think they did put it in writing in one location, it's going to be just daytime hours. It's not going to really extend into the evening. So I think 5 really was the time. I need to verify, but it didn't go into the evening from what I recall.
Okay.
So it's just daytime hours.
And then I have another question. So vans will pick up the daycare residents, not the residents, but the daycare participants. Is it an option that family members could drop them off or pick them up, or will they all be transported to and from in the vans? Will that be part of it, or will there be other cars and other people coming, dropping off and picking up?
Yeah, I've had several discussions with the applicant, and they have never indicated that being an option that somebody could drop off the participants. There's actually one van there right now. It was there when I drove by this morning, and it's one of the larger vans. It's not huge, but it does hold a number of passengers. So you kind of have an idea of what that looks like if you drove by right now. I think it's sitting there. They're not using the property at the moment, but I think that van is sitting there in the driveway so you could see it. But they have not indicated that there would be any option to drop off any participants on site. You know, that could be a condition of approval. I would think when they propose their parking plan to the city council, I would think that would be a condition that we should impose, because otherwise we'd have to look at the safety of dropping off residents at that location, especially if all of a sudden 20 people are getting dropped off every day. We'd want to take a close look at that and make sure it's done properly. With just the two vans that is anticipated, it looks like the site can really handle that that fairly easily.
Have they had any discussion about for the residents, those who live there, are there visiting hours? So let's say on a Sunday afternoon, all 8 residents have their family members come at 2 in the afternoon to visit. What's the parking like for that?
Yeah, we get into some federal law in this type of an issue. They have the ability to have visitors. We really have to treat this as a normal residential home. So nobody could impose a rule at your property to say you can only have visitors at certain times. We can't treat it any differently than we do a normal house, because that would be really a form of discrimination.
Even though it's a business.
It's really looked at as federal law as a home. It's a family unit living together full time. And so we just can't impose.
So we don't have to worry about that scenario.
Yeah, we really don't have that ability with that.
It needs to be looked at as two separate issues, right? The house is the house, and the people living in the house, that's one thing.
Yep.
And then this, that they're proposing the use of for more of a business-related, it's a separate deal, right?
Exactly, completely separate. I mean, they are interrelated to a certain degree, but we can't impose any rules on the house itself.
Do they already have residents living in the home? Has that started yet?
That has not started yet. We have made sure that they meet our code regarding the use. They are still going through the process of our building inspector inspecting it for that use. And then the state will also come in and inspect and give final approval. So it is not being used. Nobody's living in the house right now, to my understanding, at least not as part of this proposal. From what I see, it looks vacant at the moment. And so they have not started that yet.
Oh, go ahead.
How many people, do you recall, are living, I don't know if you call them residents, patients, in Cascade Academy?
So on Second North?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that one, if I remember correctly, they have approval for 16.
Okay, so that's a bigger place.
It's a bigger place, and we didn't have in our code at that point in time a limit of 8 when they applied, and that's been added to the code since then. And so they have the ability to have 16, but any other home that's proposed in town. We've had 2 other facilities besides that one. Some have been in commercial zones or resort zones, so they've had more residents. But in any residential zones, it really everywhere it's limited to 8 if it's a home at this point in time.
And then is there
they
staff?
Can ask for a special accommodation, I will mention that. So ultimately, Somebody could ask for that, but it's unlikely they'd ever get more than 8. Okay.
And the staff, oh, thank you. Does staff also, I mean, they probably have some staff that live on site as well?
So my understanding is they have employees, but I haven't understood any staff to live at any of the facilities that we have in town. And so, yeah, we end up having the employee parking, but we, and that usually is just the normal parking that is required for a home. But as far as I know, in none of the facilities, nobody lives there full-time. They always have employees that take different shifts.
Oh, okay. And if they did, they would be included in the 8 maximum.
Yeah, if they live there full-time, yeah. It would be limited day. There's not a special provision for more residents than just the 8. But there can be employees that come in. Yep, that's correct.
Sorry, I may have missed this, but what are the conditions for somebody to live in the home, the 8 residents? Are those set federally, or what are those conditions?
Yeah, that is correct, and I can only answer a very limited amount of that because I'm not an expert on federal law. But the one thing I know for sure is there's not a requirement to allow a violent-type person to be in any of these facilities. If they are considered violent, then they can be prohibited from living in a facility like this. So that's the one thing I do know as we've gone through these over the years. And that's usually the question that pops up. But yeah, just normal residents, there's not.
Is there an age range?
There's not. It's just what needs to be looked at as a normal family.
It's like a residential home. Anybody can live in it, up to 8 people, right?
Exactly. Yeah. For instance, we can't go and tell a house, a normal house, any type of conditions above and beyond anything that's normal. It's the same thing with this. We really can't impose any conditions we wouldn't impose on any house in town.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. Do we have a motion for this item?
I'll make a motion. Make a motion that we approve the conditional use permit for daycare, the property located at 15 South, 700 East, and is in the C2 zone, and also accept the possible findings. Do you want to add something about the parking? Or the drop-off, I mean? Or is that something City Council?
Yeah, it's really something that is specific to City Council approving, so they'll make a presentation regarding the parking to the City Council, and City Council will decide how they want to handle that. It is different. This is a different scenario than what we anticipated when we adopted the daycare into the code, even just recently, actually, when we adopted, we looked at daycare and then we looked at the parking requirements. So it's always hard to anticipate everything you're going to be looking at in the future. So that's why the code's written the way it is, so they can look at it specifically.
I would, I don't know if I can piggyback something on this or not, but I would think that we should ask them to, when they do propose this to City Council, they also have a daytime hours, at least an hours of, we plan on being open from blank to blank, so that at least City Council can take that into consideration.
Yeah, I think that's a very good recommendation. We could do that with this conditional use permit.
Do you want to add that? Is that
yes.
Amenable to you? All right, so we'll add Travis's statement to the proposal that Janine just made. Do I have a second for that?
I'll second.
Thank you. Let's start down with Kim, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. All right. All right, moving on. Item number 5, Midway City is proposing a code text amendment of section 16.0.5, commercial C2 and C3 zones, 1607R-1-7, 1608R-19, 16.09R1-11, 16.10R1-15, 16.11R1-22, and 16.12RA-1-43. The proposed code would allow cottage industries as permitted use in each of these listed zones.
Yeah, I might be able to describe this quicker than the
That was a mouthful of numbers.
It was, so I won't repeat those code sections that we've already heard
Don't
of.
Don't ask me two items.
Yeah, this is really a cleanup item. I think some of you were on the Planning Commission. We went through and adopted the cottage industries code, you know, within the last couple of years. And we really revamped our cottage industries. It was a complete change from before. We actually took out all the cottage industries out of the code, and then we adopted a new code which allowed for piano teachers and art teachers and accountants to have those types of businesses to have a very limited amount of really clientele coming to the house. We all know that people teach piano. We wanted to make it legal for that to happen in a residential neighborhood because it really wasn't allowed in the past. But we were very specific on which types of items met the criteria, and the code is pretty detailed. But the one thing, when we added the definition, it says it would be allowed in all residential zones. We didn't actually go into the residential zones and put in the words cottage industry. And so this is really a cleanup of matching the code that's been adopted and putting in their home occupations, which are allowed in all residential zones, and then also including cottage industries, which was the intent of that code. But also we've put it into the C2 and C3 zones because there are existing homes in those zones, and also we allow mixed use in those zones. So somebody who is in a mixed use project who wants to be a piano teacher has the ability to do that, and it's stated specifically in the code as long as they meet the criteria for it. So again, just a cleanup item, just trying to make sure everything works well in the code. And so we're really not trying to change anything in the code that wasn't discussed when that code was adopted. Are there any questions for staff on this, I'll call it a cleanup in the code?
Any questions? Someone like
I'll make a proposal.
Well, we do have a public hearing schedule.
Oh, yes, that's right, we do. Uh-huh. I'm sorry. Thank you for reminding me. We'd like to open the public hearing for anyone who is here in person or online to speak to this proposed amendment. Do we have anyone online?
No, we don't.
No, all right. All right, with that, we will close the public hearing. And do we have anyone who would like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept the conditions proposed by staff where we change the code text amendment of sections listed again by staff. Can I say that?
Yeah, that's perfect.
And the proposed code will allow cottage industries as a permitted use in each of the zones again listed by staff.
Okay, thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All right. Can I start with you again, Janine?
Aye.
Okay, wonderful. Item number 6, if someone would like to make a motion.
I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Planning Commission. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, that was an hour shorter than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. This is, I like this. Are we trading pens?
Well, you said you are the blue one.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
Thank you so
good.
Much.
How are you? Okay.
I'm doing well.
Yeah, look at that. I think it's my new favorite.
Oh, well, I was tied. I was tied up with other stuff.
Yeah.
I ran into one of our neighbors up the hill in the lakes.
Yeah.
And they were pretty fired up about it. What transpired?
Oh, sure. I'll let you know.
And so
was this adamant opposition expressed?